The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. We have wonderful things to talk about tonight. We're going to learn a little bit about history that most of us, including yours truly, have never heard before. Third hour, we're going to talk to Yoichi Shimatsu in Hong Kong about his views. He's got another brilliant Yoshi essay up there about the Florida shootings at the high school, and you better read that. This guy is way ahead of the game again. It is a contrived event. Let me just leave it at that. And his part one is in his columnist box. The second part is up right near the top of headlines. So please, by all means, read that. Now, first up tonight is Frank Joseph. Frank, are you there by any chance?
Yes, sir. By chance, I'm here.
Very good. What we're going to do is talk about Benito Mussolini. Now, before any of you laugh, and that's probably not this audience, but that's probably what the average American would do. They'd chuckle. Ah, that buffoon, that cartoon character, that clown, that idiot. He deserved to be executed with his mistress and hung upside down in the public square. All the rest of it. A flunky, a loser. You have no idea, those of you who would think that, how wrong you are. Frank, tell us about the background and the research you have put into this project. He has a book out now. It's been on Amazon since when? What year? 2009 or two?
Well, it came out in 2010, but there's a new revision that's coming out next month that's expanded and has a lot of new material in it.
We have that up under your name as a link. You bet. We'll talk more about that a little later. The bottom line is history, as we are commonly exposed to it, is a damned lie. It's a fiction. It's a fabrication. They take a basic historical reality and then embellish it, flesh it out with any manner and all manner of lies, disinformation, deceit, social engineering techniques, all the rest of it. Mussolini was anything but what most people think. Take it away, maestro.
I don't know that I'm a maestro. I consider myself a student. Well, anyway, I agree.
What was it about him? You agree with what I said, then? Okay, tell me why. Why do you agree?
Well, I agree with what you said about people being. I have the opinion that he was kind of a worthless gangster type, or like an Al Capone type.
And exactly. Exactly.
People, were conned by this guy, and when the war came, they were really poor soldiers. They didn't care, and they were just cowardly and gave up, and that was the whole story. And I accepted that. That's what I was brought up to believe. That was my education and so on. I thought, yeah, the guy just was a loser. And I was traveling through Europe about, it's got to be more than 20 years ago now for sure, and I got a chance to meet some veterans of World War II on all sides, Germans, Italians, English, Russians. And I heard firsthand from these people, and these were some of them common soldiers, others were rather high-ranking officers. There were a few that I really got to meet that were pretty high up. And what they told me after I'd won their confidence, because I told them that I just want to know the truth. I don't have any particular agenda. I didn't have any agendas at all. But what I learned from them was astounding. And I found it all rather difficult to believe until I got back home and I did follow-up research for about 5 years. And I found that they were absolutely correct in what they told me about who Mussolini really was. I met people who actually didn't know him, who I guess they claimed to have been his friends. And the portrayal that we have of him is understandable if we can grasp the fact that history is nothing more than politics.
Right.
And that the way history is taught is because the people that are teaching it want you to believe in a certain way so that you will act in a certain way, so that you be prepared to accept certain things that you would not ordinarily accept.
It's programming.
You know, they don't want you to look behind the curtain.
No, no. It's programming. It's engineering. It's creating and shaping and texturing our world, our life, our beliefs, and it's all essentially fabricated. The winners write the story. They don't write the truth. They write what they want you to think was the truth. It's very simple, and it's never going to change. The idea that the Italians were remotely competent with anything they did, of course, is pretty much anathema to the common core belief system of what World War II was about. It's disgraceful. I don't know anything on the magnitude of what you know, but I have read enough to know that what we are taught is, again, a fabrication. Go ahead, please, Frank.
Well, my book is not entirely unique because there have been some popular books that have come out, I would say, just over the past 10 or 15 years that have thrown some real light on what actually did happen. I don't mean just the war. People have to understand, especially Americans have to understand, that after World War I, Italy was bankrupt. It was the most bankrupt country in all of Europe, and maybe the entire industrialized world. The country was awash in unemployment, political unrest like you wouldn't believe, but domestic terrorism on a scale that we're only beginning to witness now.
You sound like you're describing Germany after World War I, too.
Well, actually, Germany and Italy were quite similar, but Italy was supposedly on the victor's side.
Right.
And they were given very short shrift. They had suffered hideously in the war, and they fought very bravely, but their leaders were very poor in World War I, and the loss of human life, well, as it was for the Germans and the French and even the Americans, the loss of life was just hideous. And Italy took it really on the chin. And you had in the years after World War I, you had all these politicians on the left, all these politicians in the center, all trying to save the country. They all failed consistently. Meanwhile, guess what happened? The House of Rothschild came in and literally bought the country for a song. So they found that by 1920, all wages, everything were controlled by the House of Rothschild. And this is not propaganda or fantasy. And I try to provide the background information for this. So Italy was in the worst conceivable shape you could be. Mussolini had been in World War I. He had been badly wounded. A mortar exploded in his face. He's lucky to have survived. He had to undergo surgery without any anesthesia. But as bad as his thing was, it was really the same as soldiers anywhere. But he suffered hideously as his comrades did. Mussolini, to begin with, had been raised as a Marxist. His father was a complete communist. But Mussolini realized that it was hogwash, that Bolshevism was just the opposite the bad side of democracy. Democracy is this perfumed word to make people imagine they're in control of things when they are being controlled, whereas communism is just naked despotism. So he rejected both liberal democracy and Marxism and created something new, and he called it fascism. And fascism is based on the old Roman idea that if you are trying to resolve your situation, but your neighbors are disunited, nothing will happen. But if you all are organized and you're all together, you can change things. And that's the basis of the symbol of the fascists, this old Roman symbol, which shows these a bundle of rods wrapped together around an axe.
Yeah.
That stands for unity. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, this concept of fascism that he literally invented, he completely disempowered the communists, threw them out, disempowered the liberal Democrats, cut off all ties to the House of Rothschild, and he said, the only people that can fix Italy are Italians, he said. And he put everybody to work. The economy flourished. It became a model economy, so much of a model economy. Now, most people don't realize this, that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt sent his economic advisors to Benito Mussolini personally and said, we are here to learn from what you've done here. And some of the concepts that Mussolini taught American advisors were applied in America, like the WPA project, and it's totally fascist. And
that was in the middle of the Depression.
Except that our government is too corrupt. Mussolini's government was not corrupt.
That's fascinating.
What he did, the Italian people loved Mussolini. He had the highest approval rating of any. This is not another thing people don't realize. The two men that have had the highest approval rating from their own people are Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler.
Mussolini gave Italy and its wonderful heritage and history back to the Italians. All right? That's the bottom line here. The Americans came over there, as you said, to try to figure out how the hell to end this Great Depression that the banksters had caused over here. The same people that had owned and controlled and co-opted Italy. Go ahead.
That's correct. That's correct. And from that moment on, the bankers resolved, we need a war so we can recoup our losses in Italy. And they worked and they agitated in all of the Allied countries during the Depression, said that the fascists are terrible, Mussolini is this horrible dictator, and so on. They didn't care whether Mussolini was a dictator or was a pussycat. They couldn't care less. The only thing they cared about is he took their financial control of Italy away. So most people don't realize this, a vast majority, that without Mussolini, there's no doubt that Italy and Spain would have turned communist. There's no doubt about it. And the communism was not, in those days, was not the ideology we kind of think of today. Communism in those days was Soviet Russian Stalinist communism. So Stalin would have had a foothold in Europe, in Italy and in Spain. Mussolini stopped that. It's an amazing thing. He also created a system of Italy for the Italians. How do you think Mussolini would have reacted today if he would have seen the enormous immigration chaos going on in Italy and all over Europe today? That would have been totally impossible under Mussolini. There would have never been this inundation of these peoples immigrating from all over the world, trashing Europe.
Third and fourth world, hundreds of thousands of third and fourth and fifth world peoples being forcibly injected into Europe from Italy all the way to Norway and Scandinavia. An invasion of the worst magnitude.
This horrible condition would have never developed under Mussolini. Absolutely.
Or Hitler. Or anyone else who cared about their country and the historical, cultural, scientific achievements of Europe.
It's an interesting thing that when President Roosevelt's economic advisors went to Mussolini, and he shared with them, he said, these principles, he said, it doesn't mean you have to turn your country into a fascist country, but these are the basic things we did. One of the big things Mussolini did was public works. Public works was he scooped up all these millions of men that had no jobs literally in years and put them work in building roads.
It's called infrastructure.
And fixing all the bridges that had fallen into disrepair. Boy, this sounds just like America. I hate to tell you, but Italy in the early 1920s sounds like America in the early 21st century. Yeah. Our whole country is falling to pieces. Our bridges are dangerous. Our roads are bad. Mussolini fixed all that up. He paid men. He cleaned them up. And that's what they tried to bring back to America, and they had the WPA.
Uh-huh.
But you know why it didn't work in this country? Because the banksters were still here. That's
yes.
why.
Yeah.
You can't do anything so long as those people still have their hands in your pockets. And Mussolini stopped that. He threw out the House of Rothschild. But Roosevelt couldn't do that. He was too much in bed with them. So that's why those same principles did not work here. And
Roosevelt was surrounded with Bolshevik liberal communists, certainly in sympathy if nothing else. There's no question about it. Harry Hopkins, do your research, folks. It's all there.
I know, and this research, it's not hard to do.
No.
I mean, it's there, but most people don't bother to go after it. But I was amazed seeing all this, especially where Mussolini is supposed to be this great bully and, was very bellicose and trying to start wars. It's precisely the exact opposite. In 1938, without Mussolini, there would have definitely been war. Hitler was all ready for it. The Western Allies were all set for it. But at the Munich conference, Mussolini was the only one there that could speak four languages fluently. Nobody else could. And because of his fluency and he convinced them, he says, look, we can't have any more of these national conflicts. We must have European unity. We have this huge threat growing in the East, the Stalinist tank armies. And if we fight amongst ourselves over puny little territories like Czechoslovakia, we're going to be destroyed. And he actually convinced them to stop this.
I didn't know that. He was the man. I didn't know that. This is fascinating.
He was the guy that pulled the Munich conference together. Of course, the newspapers in the West, they thought, oh, they sold out Czechoslovakia. But if you really look at that treaty, what that was all about, they did not sell out Czechoslovakia. What they did is they sold out the communist agitators who were trying to foment this disunity. This disunity in Europe, because they knew, well, if the Germans are fighting the French and the English are fighting the Germans, then Stalin can just walk in and it'll be no problem. Well, Mussolini put a stop to that. And for his thanks for that, just the year following, after war broke out between Poland and Germany and in the West, Italy was a neutral. And the reason why Italy was neutral, they bring up, oh, Italy wasn't ready for war and all that. That's part of the reason, but that's not the main reason. The main reason was Mussolini told Hitler, he said, I can serve Europe much better by brokering a peace. Everybody knows I'm very pro-Hitler, but at the same time, I had success in Munich. He told Hitler this, and Hitler at first wanted Mussolini to come in as an ally against France and England, and Mussolini declined. He says, no, I want to be able to broker a peace, because if we have war here, Stalin is going to jump for joy, and he's going to take over. And so Mussolini tried to broker this peace, and Hitler said, okay, go ahead and see what you can do. Well, what the English did in response to this, and that's, of course, where the House of Rothschild had its main headquarters, the English told Mussolini, well, if you come and join us, we're going to defeat Germany, and we'll give you Bavaria, we'll give you parts of Berlin or whatever. You know, and Mussolini says, look, I'm not in the business of real estate, believe it or not. You know, I'm fine, and that I don't want anybody else's territory. And who are you to give other people's lands away? We have got to stop this war before it spreads. And then the English said, well, if it's going to be that way with you, then we're going to cut off your trade. What? I'm a neutral country. You don't have any right to cut off my trade. And so they cut off Italian trade. Well, you know what that meant? That means that Italy was bottled up in the Mediterranean. What's that going to do to their economy? Over time, it would so destabilize it that it could crack it up. So Mussolini said, that's it. He says, nobody, you can't take away the honor of a people like this. He declared war on them. Good for him. I mean, can you imagine somebody talking that way to America or saying, You know, if you don't do what we say, we're going to cut you off economically. What, do you think Americans would stand for that? Well, the Italians didn't. And that's how the war started. Here, Mussolini had been slapped in the face. He said, look, I'm here to present a peace deal. You know, that Mussolini's own son-in-law, Count Ciano, he was in London in early 1940, and he says, look, this fighting over Poland between the English and the French
Germans.
On one side and the Germans on the other is ridiculous, he said, because the Soviets have already invaded Poland, too. How come you didn't declare war on the Soviet Union? You only declared war on Germany. Your peace treaty with Poland was that you would declare war on anybody that invaded Poland. Okay, Germany invaded Poland. You have a right to declare war on Germany. But so did the Soviet Union. How come you didn't declare war on them? And he says, this is a ridiculous situation. We have to stop this. And the English just answered by saying, that's it. We're going to cut off your foreign trade. And we're gonna, and of course, the English could do it because they had huge fleets in Alexandria in Egypt and on the other side of the Mediterranean at Gibraltar. And with the help
right now,
of
we
the
call
French
these now we call them now sanctions. But what was done to Italy was far worse.
Before would be embargoes.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Nothing but the same thing.
That's right. We call them sanctions now. Yeah. And what we're doing to North Korea and what we're already underway doing it to Iran. We're doing it to Vladimir Putin and Russia. Why keep your eye on Ukraine? Well, watch what happens there, too. We've got so many potential explosions waiting to happen. We may be weeks away from a nuclear confrontation here in North Korea.
Well, you know, Jeff, it's only a matter of time before these Rothschild-run super states pick on somebody that is their own size.
That's
you know, it's
right.
Very easy to
That's
trip right. over somebody like in Libya or Iran or Syria. You know, it's another thing if you pick on a country like Russia and now North Korea. If they're playing with fire.
Well, Trump is talking about, he's pondering more sanctions on Russia now. They are pushing Putin further and further into a corner. And when he comes out, the bear is not going to be pleasant. They better watch out.
No, well, they thought they could do it really easy with Italy. They just laughed at Italy's military, and they were in for a real hot surprise. This is another part of World War II history that we are never told, but when World War II started, after Italy got involved in June 1940, the Italians launched the world's first blitzkrieg before the Germans ever figured it out. Matter of fact, the Germans copied it from the Italians. How about that? We don't hear about
That's
that.
That's very interesting. And didn't know that.
Isn't that something? And this blitzkrieg was incredible. It threw out the British from East Africa. It pounced their army. For about 5 months, the Italians were unstoppable. Their air force, the British Royal Air Force, was virtually decimated. And the reason why it was done was brilliant. It was a brilliant move.
Hold on right there, Frank. Hold on. I got to take a break. We'll come back. Talking about North Africa here and British rule and hegemony all of a sudden gone. Back in a minute with Frank Joseph. Okay, welcome back. Frank Joseph is our guest. We're learning a lot already about what really happened in the first half of the last century. 1938, pivotal year. Adolf Hitler, Time Magazine's Man of the Year, now it's Person of the Year, and Benito Mussolini, who pulled the same miracle in Italy that Hitler did in Germany. Extraordinary parallels. Go ahead.
Well, most people don't realize, and I certainly didn't understand, that Mussolini pulled off one of the greatest strategic successes of World War II, certainly one of the strategic military moves of all military history.
Right.
And the reason he did it was when the British moved real fast to overcome the Italian colonies in North Africa. That's where the fight for the Mediterranean would be in North Africa. And the Italian colonies were subdued pretty quickly by the British. They moved real fast with armored cars and so on. And the only way that Mussolini could get his troops, his forces from Italy to North Africa, to Tunis and North Africa, would be to send these convoys across the Mediterranean. Well, the British were just waiting for that because they would spring the trap. They'd be able to mobilize their fleet, which is mostly at Alexandria, and their other auxiliary fleet at Gibraltar, together with the French fleet. And the Italian fleet would be squeezed in between. The Italians and everybody would be a huge victory for the
Right. They were expecting a slaughter, right?
Right. They were all just waiting for that. And so the Italian Navy, although the Italian Navy was strong and a terrific Navy itself, was very badly outnumbered in the Mediterranean. So what are they going to do? How are they going to do this? So what Mussolini did is that he launched for the very first time the longest range bombing raid up to that time. It was a bombing raid. It went over almost 1,000 miles. So they had some bases and some islands in the Aegean. And he launched a bombing raid against Tel Aviv, of all places. Tel Aviv and was then all Palestine. And the reason why was because that is where the British had all their oil that fueled their warships. And the Italian bombers completely, totally destroyed the oil reserves and grounded all of the British ships in ports. They couldn't leave. And the British Navy in Gibraltar said that they would not move unless the British fleet in Alexandria, Egypt would move, but they couldn't because all their oil was now gone. And so Mussolini then could send the convoys with all of his literally hundreds of thousands of troops and supplies and everything, and they all sailed from Italy and landed in North Africa without the loss of a single ship or a man. And that was considered absolutely brilliant.
Unprecedented.
Nobody had expected that. Nobody could think that bombers could fly that far. And it was quite a remarkable thing. That's just great. So he got them there. And then when the Italians finally got mobilized in North Africa, he launched a blitzkrieg, which completely bowled over the British and threw them out of the Sudan in literally a couple of weeks. And Churchill flew into a complete rage because—and you know why he was in a rage? Not just because the British were kicked out, but because the British had lost too few men. They had only had a few hundred fatalities, maybe 1,000 or so casualties, which was very low.
In other words,
so he wanted to court-martial his own generals because obviously the British hadn't put up much of a fight.
That's right. Yeah.
How about that? He wanted a blood sacrifice, and he didn't get that. So, but that's the nature of a blitzkrieg war, which is the humane war. Get it over with as quickly as possible. You launch it in a brutal, ruthless fashion, to be sure, but you get it over with. Prolonged wars are the ones that are the bloodletting campaign.
That's the blood sacrifice, and it's a great revenue machine, too. It just keeps cranking in the money.
Revenue machine, exactly. So the British were literally booted out of the Sudan. All of East Africa fell to the Italians. They had no help from anybody except themselves. And then they geared up for all these other terrific advances across North Africa. And what happened, how the Italians did not succeed early on, was because the British had cracked the Italian military codes. At Bletchley Park in England, they were able to read all of the Italian military command's orders, even before sometimes those orders arrived for the Italian commanders in the field.
Wow.
The British already knew what the Italians were going to do. So from that point on, everything the Italians did was an ambush. They could never figure out, they never really completely figured out, how is it possible that the enemy could have cracked our code so thoroughly, but the British had done that. And this doesn't mean that that was the end of the war for the Italians. Things went bad for them, especially in North Africa, and it looked like they were losing very poorly. They were.
Uh-huh.
And Mussolini said, you know, I've got to take the pressure off of us somehow, and he came up with another brilliant plan. And this plan has been lampooned, has been regarded as a complete farce, and it's never been explained properly to the American people, except with these books like mine that are coming out now. I guess mine isn't the only, but I discussed this. So the British are getting ready to launch this major offensive to completely trounce the Italians in North Africa, and they were going to do it, there's no doubt about it, when Mussolini invades Greece. He did that as a diversion. So the British panicked. They thought, oh my God, Mussolini is going to outflank us in the Balkans. So what they did is the British stopped their major crusade, their offensive against the Italians, and they sent more than half of their supplies into Greece to stop the Italians. When that happened, then the Italians built up their strength in North Africa, and they moved against the British again. So Mussolini stabilized the whole situation. First, he made it possible for his own troops to get to North Africa in a very novel fashion with that long-range bomb raid.
Amazing.
And then he was able to take the pressure off his troops long enough for Rommel and the Africa Corps to come down, and then things got really hot for the British. So it turns out that Mussolini is by no means the buffoon, but a very brilliant commander, certainly the most brilliant military mind that the Italians had at that time. The Italians had some good generals. There's no doubt. They had some bad ones, too, just like us. But Mussolini was a great strategist. Without him, I think the Italians would have been kicked out of the fighting really early on, but...
Well, especially when the enemy knows everything you're going to do in advance. That cannot be overestimated, the importance of what Bletchley Park came up with. They did a similar thing to the Germans when they cracked their Enigma code. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. The Germans, though, caught on early on, and they were able to overcome a lot of the... espionage the British had, but in the end, the Germans lost out on that. World War II was really decided by the intelligence forces more than anything else. Everything else was kind of an afterthought.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
The Japanese, for example, never imagined that the Americans had broken their military codes, and that is why they stumbled towards defeat, because they assumed that their military codes were impervious. They never changed them.
It boggles my mind that they couldn't understand. When all else makes no sense, you've got to look at the code. You've got to think, maybe. And you have to err on the side of caution and conservatism. You've got to change it. That they didn't do it. That's just an amazingly human foible.
The Japanese also had no desire, no interest in ever conquering the United States. They wanted an armistice. Right from the beginning, they wanted an armistice between the two. They had a completely false understanding of the American mentality. They thought, well, of course, we were strangling Japan, too. The oil embargo, we were strangling the Japanese to death. And the Japanese had to strike out because it was either risk a war with the United States or die of...
And they were forced into the war. They were absolutely forced into the war.
They were extremely reluctant to go to war against us. But when they did, they thought, well, now that we've taught them a lesson at Pearl Harbor, let's come down and negotiate an armistice. Of course, that was completely impossible.
Yeah, Yamamoto especially. General Yamamoto was the one, I think, who spoke most clearly about that. Go ahead.
Well, the Japanese got into a fight with the Americans when the Japanese tried to invade Australia and the Battle of the Coral Sea. And the Japanese barely won it. They did win it, and the Americans suffered horribly. But the Japanese began to wonder, some Japanese began to wonder, How is it that we're all the way down to Australia and the Americans show up here? How could they have known we were going to be here? So some of the Japanese commanders in the field said, you know, it's possible that the Americans have cracked our codes. Oh, no, the higher-up commander said, that's impossible. They don't even understand Japanese. How are they going to be able to understand our codes? And so it wasn't until late in the war that the Japanese began to change their codes, but it was way too late. I mean, we're talking like late 1944. And by that time, it was decided. But with Mussolini, Mussolini and worked with the Germans to figure out, yeah, they've got our codes compromised somehow. And so they did change their codes, and that threw the British for a loop from time to time. But the British, in the end, got the upper hand, and they got terrific code breaking, and were able to. That's how they won the war. Churchill himself, after World War II, said that without Bletchley Park, we could not have won the war. And he was completely correct. Because everything after that was an ambush, as I say. It's amazing, isn't it, that the Italians and the Germans were able to still fight on and still get victories from time to time when all of their high top secret information was already well known to the enemy.
Well, I imagine playing a football game when you know every play the opposition team is going to run at you in advance.
Exactly. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion. But this wasn't the end by any means for Mussolini after he had the Greek campaign. And Mussolini said, I don't care whether we win the Greek campaign or not. All I care about is that we draw off a number of forces from North Africa, draw the British into here and dilute their forces so we can get back on the offensive again. And that's exactly what happened. So he was a pretty smart commander, and he certainly outthought Churchill. Matter of fact, some of Mussolini's own military advisor says, you know, Churchill isn't that stupid that if you invade Greece, he's not going to be lured into that. I mean, that's such an obvious ploy. But Mussolini said, he is that stupid. And he was right.
That's funny.
And Churchill's advisor says, do not go into Greece. Let Mussolini get bogged down in Greece and let's continue on in North Africa. No, Churchill said, we have to go into Greece. And look what happened. And the Germans came in, and the British got kicked out again. How many times have the British been Dunkirked in World War II? I lost count. It's about four or five times they've been thrown out, and mostly thanks to Churchill, because the British fought very well. They were terrific fighters. They had great equipment. Their leaders were their generals were pretty top-notch. They're a wonderful military machine. Their navy was splendid, but Churchill made it really difficult for them to get anything done because he was such a
drunk and he was a total jerk anyway.
He was a hypocrite.
He used to take his clothes off and go running around with no clothes on, and they had to cover him up. I think that's one reason why they had four or five doubles, because he was completely unpredictable. He was just an idiot.
Most of the time, he was so drunk he could not get on the radio.
He couldn't speak.
These famous speeches, you know, we'll fight.
They weren't him.
That was done by a British actor.
Right. Yeah.
His name was Percival Avril, and he was chosen because Mr. Avril had a terrific mimicry talent, and he could sound just like Churchill. Probably better than Churchill.
Probably better.
So these recordings that we have of him, you know, saying all these great, wonderful things. Oh, we'll fight on the beach.
Not him.
A lot of times, it isn't even him.
Now, you mentioned Dunkirk, Frank. What a gift. What a gift to the Brits. If Germany had taken Dunkirk and interred all of those men in labor camps, how far back would that have set the British? What do you think?
They would have had to surrender because there was nothing. They had nothing then. Churchill would have been just thrown out of Parliament. There's no way the war would have come to an end.
And Hitler ordered
Hitler did not want to put people into camps. He did not want to humiliate Britain.
He respected the British.
He not only respected the British, he knew that England was necessary for the coming war against the Soviet Union. He knew that Germany and Italy by themselves were not strong enough. He spoke continuously, and Mussolini, about a united Europe. He said, I don't care whether you hate me, hate Mussolini and all that, but on some basic things, we have to cooperate.
Now, let's see, the problem is that the Rothschild Bolsheviks took Russia. And where are the Rothschild Bolsheviks headquartered? Right in the city of London. You got a big problem.
London has always been their big place, yeah.
Yeah.
And so the British people, of course, were horribly betrayed. And the Italians also were fighting out of Belgium. They sent Air Force volunteers. They sent quite a good-sized squadron over to bomb England.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why was out of Italian revenge, for sure. Imagine this now, you know, just a few weeks before, Mussolini had been pleading with the British to come to some kind of an agreement to stop the war from spreading. And the British, Churchill, answered Mussolini by sending a couple of his bombers to attack Turin in northern Italy. He attacked the workers' quarters, a completely undefended city.
Right.
There was no damage done in the city whatsoever, but something like 100 or so men, women, and children were killed. Then the British sent another bombing raid, and it was the same thing. The Italian people were absolutely outraged by this, and they demanded revenge. And so the Italians sent a squadron of aircraft to Belgium, and they flew alongside the Germans to fight the British. And the Italians had biplanes, which were pretty outdated in those days. The one biplane they had, though, was called the Falcon, the Fiat Falcon. It was the greatest biplane fighter that it was ever made. It looked antiquated, and the British would laugh at it when they saw it. They figured this would be an easy thing to knock down. Well, they learned to their dismay that the Falcon could outmaneuver the Spitfire. It wasn't as fast as the Spitfire. And so the British learned that if you got into a dogfight with the Falcon, you're going to lose. Because that puppy, if it got in close, you could not outmaneuver it. And so the British found that they did not have it as easy as they thought. Now, this is another lie that we're told. That the Italians went to fight the British and they were all massacred in a sort of a merry fashion, you know. That's not the case. The Italians lost about a dozen aircraft shot down, and the British lost about a dozen aircraft shot down. So the Italians gave as good as they got.
Yeah, with biplanes.
The Italians were not there to fight the British Air Force. They were there to bomb the harbors, and they played a very important role, because the RAF was doing everything it could to defend London from the German Air Force. And so all their planes were there. Now their harbors are being attacked by the Italian bombers, and so they drew off more support from London. It made it easier for the Germans.
We're just about out of time, but we've got 2 minutes left.
Oh,
but it's important to point out here that the Churchill ordered his bombers to bomb Italy, prolonging, reigniting everything. Turin. Churchill bombed Germany. People don't know that. And the Germans demanded revenge. Same routine. History tells the opposite story. They never tell you the truth. Churchill was the one behind it all. And Bomber Harris.
But it's a sad thing, because Turin was this beautiful town. It didn't have any military significance whatsoever. The only thing
like
there was
Dresden.
An automobile plant.
Right.
Yeah. And these poor people were killed horribly. And so naturally the Italian people, as any people, would be a little upset by that. Wouldn't exactly be pro-British after that sort of a thing. And it's a matter of national honor. So I think we do the same thing. How would we feel if Iran bombed parts of America and killed civilians? I think we'd be a little upset about it.
The Iranians aren't insane, so they wouldn't do it. But you're quite right. What concerns me, though, is North Korea and the false flag potential there. It seems without much doubt now that the Trump general military-industrial cartel that runs the show now has decided that they're going to go after North Korea's nuclear capability, probably in the next 3 to 6 weeks, as soon as the Olympics are over. And we're going to see Maybe some surprises. I don't know. It is said, one report that goes back almost 2 years now, is that Kim had a lot more nukes than anyone knows. Can he deliver them? I don't know. He's got 73 submarines. But this thing will probably be ignited with a false flag. In other words, one of our ships, maybe a destroyer, will be torpedoed, maybe by one of our own boats, and
sure,
it sinks. Then
we have
the pretext for revenge.
No, I agree with you. It's only a matter of time. One thing is absolutely sure, that under a system like this, catastrophe is inevitable, whether it comes now or in
well
some
said.
Other form.
Well said.
Yeah.
It is absolutely inevitable. It's a one-way track to inevitability, and that's at the end of the line.
Well, they're getting us used to disasters. What is the massacre? It used to be the massacre of the year. Then it was the massacre of the month. Now it's the massacre of the week or the massacre of the day. Our flags are at half-mast all the time because of all, we're the most violent, implosive society I can imagine.
Well,
so we might as well do it externally, too.
Well, we do. We have. We will, and we're going to pay. Maybe next time we'll pay for it here at home. We have never had a war since 1812 on our shores, on our turf. And maybe that's going to change to some degree. We'll see. Certainly by missile, by bombs. There are a lot of potentials now that we didn't used to have to face. Now we do. Our latest attempt at intercepting an incoming missile from Hawaii with our anti-missile system failed again. So good luck. Good luck. Frank, that was fascinating. And all of you,
it's
new
really
book...
It's really interesting, and thanks for the opportunity to discuss this
listeners. Nobody knows. So we thank you. Look under Frank Joseph, Mussolini's War, and you'll understand about the book, how to get it. It's coming out again next month, a whole new edition of it, and probably one of the most unique books on history in the last century that you'll ever read. Thank you, Frank. Talk to you next month. Great. Great job.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I look forward to it.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
And we will be right back with hour number two in just a minute. Hygiene I've ever seen, all from Trioxy. As many of you know, ozone oxygen is highly